Good morning. Meeting will come to order. Clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. Members, we're not going to do the minutes today because I just signed them right now, so we don't have them copied yet for you. But we are doing a meeting tomorrow. What time is it again, Craig? 6:30? Yeah, 6:30 here in room 200. And the item on the agenda, the only one I have right now at least, is a bill for Rural Finance Authority to give some additional money to the Rural Finance Authority that I guess is out of money. So I'd encourage people to look at that and be prepared to come with questions, but that's the reason we're having a special meeting tomorrow night that's not in our possession yet today, or we'd be acting on it today, but it will be, I believe, referred to us on the floor this afternoon.
Mr. Chair, we just finished that bill.
Okay. Oh, in capital investment, right.
2 or 3 minutes ago.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, yeah, that was just finished in capital investment.
Right.
So, yeah, some of you were on capital investment, just already had that bill this morning. That's right. So anyway, that's why we're having a special meeting tomorrow night and why we're not doing it now. So any other questions on that? All right, if not, our agenda item today is to go through the governor's budget. And I guess at the outset, let me say, Commissioner, I guess I had hoped that there was going to be a little bit more detail here on some of the specifics of the governor's budget than what we have. But let's go through what you have and let's see how it goes. And we may ask you to come back or someone to come back tomorrow night with more of the detail. I would at least like to have the detail available for all the members of the committee in hard copy that we can give to them, and we can talk about that at the end of the day today. If there are no other questions from members on other issues, welcome back to the committee, Commissioner Friends and Budget Director Kelly. Which one of you wants to go first?
I'll start out, Mr. Chair. Thank you, and good morning, members. Appreciate the opportunity to be here today. We will make sure that we get those copies of the individual, the more detailed breakdown of the budget to you. We did get it posted on the website, but didn't get it copied off in time for this morning, but we'll get that to you later today, so you'll have that to look at. What I would like to do today, Mr. Chair, is go over some of the slides. We did add some more detail from what I presented last Tuesday with the governor on the 24th of January, but to give you a sense of sort of the priorities of the governor's budget and some of the figures that go behind that. So if that's okay, I'll get started and we'll go through the slides that you do have. Everyone should have a copy of the slide deck. We don't have the scroll down version here on the camera's not working now, so we'll go through the slide deck that you have handed out. There's some copies over here too if people don't have them in the audience. The first slide obviously was designed to give us some perspective about where we've been and where we're going. One of the things that we really have been concerned about, many of us who've been here for the last 6 years have been concerned about, and that is changing the dynamics from constant deficit to having a more robust and positive balance going forward. And so the first slide just shows you where we all began, and this snapshot was taken right at the November forecast. So what we have here is a slide that shows the different forecasts that we were facing. So for example, if you look at the long deficit in 2012, 2013, the $6.1 billion deficit, that's what we faced in the November forecast of 2010. So then if you look at the $1.4 billion we have projected for 2018-19, that was the forecast that we just got in November of 2016. So what this does is shows you a snapshot in time when we have the November forecast and when we look out into the future. So clearly we've been able to make some changes and get out of the red and get into the blue here and see projected surpluses or balances going forward. One of the things we tried to do over the last 6 years is to change the equation. As many of you know, we were facing deficits for many years, and part of that problem was a lack of revenue. And we believe that on the revenue side, we solved a decade-long problem by increasing primarily increasing income taxes on the top 2% of income earners in Minnesota. There were also some other changes we made, but we felt this was one of the ways that we were able to provide more revenue on the revenue side. On the expenditure side of the equation, we believe we've been able to keep our expenditures below our revenues. This is fundamental to keeping a balanced budget. And third, we've only been funding what we can afford, and we've repaid the debt that we owed the schools, so we've been able to manage our expenses and our expenditures so that we stay underneath our revenue growth. So if you look at the next slide, our state finances continue to improve. As you know, we've projected a $1.4 billion positive budget balance for 2018-2019. We've projected a $1.44 billion budget balance for 2020-2021. We've had seven forecasts in a row now with positive balances, which have really helped strengthen our bottom line. As many of you know, in July last year, AAA rating was restored by Fitch. Now, Fitch based their AAA upgrade on Minnesota's solid and broad-based economy. They feel we have a low liability burden or low debt burden, and we have strong control over our revenues and spending, and we have a sophisticated approach to reserve funding. Fitch also stated that these factors, along with Minnesota's financial flexibility and a projected surplus over the biennium, have positioned this state well to navigate future fluctuations in the economy. The rating agencies also looked at the debt liability compared to other states and found that Minnesota's debt liability was low as measured against Minnesota's personal income. So we believe the rating agencies' review of Minnesota's debt burden confirms what the governor's been saying for some time. Let's invest in Minnesota by passing a bonding bill now that will support our universities and colleges, that will support our economic development throughout the state, support efforts to provide clean water, and repair our infrastructure.
Commissioner France, can I interrupt you on that? And I guess members, as we go through this, if people have questions for the commissioner or budget director Kelly, I guess I just ask that you raise your hands and be recognized. I mean, it's the whole budget. I don't think we want to go through the entire budget before we take questions. So if someone's got questions on something as we get into it, go ahead. And I guess my question, commissioners, you said that some rating agency had said that the debt level was low. I guess I always thought that our debt level per capita, as you looked at it, was kind of in the middle of the pack, maybe 25th ranking of the 50 states or something. Do you have a ranking of where we are in terms of number of states, or when you say it's low, I guess what's the context for that?
Mr. Chair, members, the Fitch was looking at the overall debt capacity or debt liability of the state of Minnesota with respect to comparing it to the total Minnesota personal income. So by comparing that measure to other states, they felt we were on the low end. I can get that precise ranking from Fitch. I don't have that in front of me right now. But that's how they were trying to compare Minnesota. You know, as you know, it's difficult to measure states to one another sometimes, and you have to make sure you're doing apples to apples. And so what they were trying to do with the overall debt liability was to show that in relation to total personal income. But I'll get that ranking for you.
Yeah, I'd appreciate that. I guess, you know, given we didn't have a bonding bill last year, we might have dropped a little bit too. But I'd be curious to see where that ranking is. Thank you.
Yes. And the last point I just want to make on this slide is, as you all know, we now have a budget reserve that we're at an all-time high. But let's go on to the next one, and this really is where...
Representative Fabian's got something on that, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Franz, when you say that the reserves are at an all-time high, is that based on percentage of the budget or dollars, or what is your definition of all-time high?
Mr. Chair, Representative, in this particular case, it's the number. The sheer number is higher than we've ever seen before at almost $2 billion. And I don't have the percentage, but I would be surprised if it wasn't on the high end of the percentage, too, but I don't know that number.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you get that information for us in some sort of a historical perspective?
Yes.
Thank you, Commissioner. Go ahead.
Well, let's do some math. I think that's kind of what this committee likes to do. So if we turn to the slide about the general fund budget, what I'd like to do is kind of walk through the changes first. Let's walk through the changes, make sure we understand what's being changed here and what's the differences, and give you a point of reference. So if we start with the left column, the November forecast, you'll see that the bottom number there is $1.4 billion. That's the number from the forecast. That column, the November forecast column, has not changed from the November forecast. So that's where we start. So now if you look at the middle column, what I'll do is I'll walk through the middle, the changes the governor's proposing, and then we'll see how that affects the balances to give you the final balance. But if you first notice at the very top, the beginning balance, you see a change there. The beginning balance is changing here because the governor has proposed spending in this biennium, in fiscal year 17, specifically for the health care premium relief that was just signed into law last Friday. So the governor's budget proposal here includes the $312 million for the 25% premium relief. So by appropriating those funds in fiscal year 2017, we must change the beginning balance for 2018-2019. Now, in the final agreement that was reached between the governor and the legislature that was signed last week, this amount was increased to $326 million to account for the $15 million in the continuity of care funding that was also included. That $15 million number has not been reflected in these numbers yet. It was only the anticipated $312 million premium relief bill. So the other changes in the beginning balance include, so we have a current year impact of the federal tax conformity legislation signed into law, so there were some changes in that for fiscal 17. That changes the beginning balance. And there's a deficiency funding request for the Department of Corrections. I'll talk a little bit more about that in detail later. So that's how we get the $330 million change to the beginning balance. Now the revenue line reflects a reduction in revenues of $55 million in the middle column. The revenue changes in the governor's budget include $191 million of tax reductions offset by tax and other revenue increases. These changes net out to $55 million in lower revenues. I want to note here that not all of the governor's tax package is included in the revenue line. The tax bill includes about $115 million of spending or expenditures such as tax aids and credits like local government aid and county aid. Those are contained in the expenditure line. So if you look at the expenditure line, if we go down to the bottom expenditure line, you see the $1.2 billion number. That is the net general fund expenditures in this for the 2018-2019 biennium. But let me walk you through that math first. So if you go back up, you'll see the HCAF expenditures, Healthcare Access Fund expenditures. That's $716 million in healthcare expenditures have been moved to the Healthcare Access Fund, freeing up resources in the general fund. The $716 million change reflects a reduction of medical assistance expenditures in the general fund and an increase in those same expenditures in the Healthcare Access Fund. Furthermore, if you go down, as you can see in the middle column, there's been an increase in expenditures of about $1.9 billion in the general fund. These are the total investments that the governor is recommending for his proposals in jobs and education, state government reforms, and improving the quality of life. So by subtracting the $716 million from the $1.9 billion, the total increase in general fund expenditures is $1.2 billion. Now, we've provided a schedule dealing with the governor's general fund budget recommendations that total the $1.9 billion, and that's the schedule that, Mr. Chair, you were referring to earlier that we'll provide to the panel later today. That schedule will also reflect the changes in the Health Care Access Fund for medical assistance. So when we prepared this budget, the governor and legislature had not yet reached a final agreement on the 25% premium relief. So the governor's proposed $312 million from the budget reserve in the general fund is shown on the last line there, reserves, in the middle column, the $312 million. That has been adjusted out of the reserve, and it still needs to reflect the other $15 million that I mentioned for continuity of care. So if we go to the right column, let me go through and show you the totals and where we end up for the balance. So right now, you can see that at the bottom of that right column, we have $79 million. That's what's left on the bottom line. We see a reserve total of about $2 billion. Now, this totals $1.6 billion in the budget reserve after taking out the $312 million. It does include the $350 million in the cash flow account. So if you take the cash flow account, the $1.6 billion reserve, we have about $2 billion. These changes do not reflect the $50 million for continuity of care that I mentioned earlier.
Commissioner Franz, is there some other money in that reserve as well, like, I don't know, stadium reserve or other stuff?
Mr. Chair, exactly. There's about $38 million in that number that reflect the current reserve in the stadium reserve fund. So you take the budget reserve, cash flow account, and the stadium reserve, that adds up to a total of $2.006 billion. Thank you. Any questions? Before, I want to go to the healthcare access fund next and show you the changes there, but maybe we want to pause for any questions here before we go to that.
Nope. Don't see any questions.
Good.
Go ahead.
All right, let's go to the healthcare access fund. So that one's another chart labeled healthcare access fund. We wanted to show you this because of the changes that we're proposing in the healthcare access fund. This chart's a little bit different than the one before. This covers two biennia. So what we wanted to do is start with the projected November forecast numbers. Those have not changed from the November forecast. And then show you where we end up at the end of 2021 for the balance of $323 million. So let's walk through that. So first, I just want to reiterate, the healthcare access fund is made up of revenue from the 2% tax on providers, the 1% tax on healthcare premiums, the Minnesota Care Enrollee premiums, the investment income from the fund, and also federal funding that helps pay for some of the low-income Minnesotans from Minnesota Care program. So the governor, first of all, was recommending that the 2% provider tax continue into the future. In 2011, the 2% provider tax was set to expire on December 31, 2019. By continuing the 2% provider tax, we will be able to use some health care resources in the health care access fund to pay health care expenditures in this current budget, 18-19, and in the future budget for 2021. Now, the chart shows that the November forecast had a balance of $1.382 billion, you see on the bottom left line under budget balance. Now, the governor proposes spending $733 million on health care in 18-19 from the health care access fund. The $733 million includes the $716 million I just mentioned before on the general fund budget chart. In addition, the $713 includes his proposals for the funding the public option, for purchasing additional reform in the healthcare market, and agency operating pressures. So you can see then in 2021, the governor proposes spending, instead of $733, he proposes spending $1.1 billion, of which $1.47 billion is from medical assistance, instead of $716 million that we propose for this biennium. This would all come from the healthcare access fund. Now, by continuing the 2% provider tax in 2019 and going beyond, the healthcare access fund resources will increase. You'll see the revenue line by $999 million. I'm surprised we couldn't round that up to a billion, but, you know, we do try to be exact. So we have $999 million on that line, and that is the additional revenue that comes in from extending the provider tax at the end of 2019, and that's why we see more funds coming in 20 and 21. So if you look at the final right column, so this is the governor's budget proposal for the end of 2021, assuming the provider tax is extended, assuming we make these transfers of expenditures from the healthcare access or into the healthcare access fund, the final balance would be $323 million at the end of 20 and 21.
So, Commissioner Franz, let me ask you again, what's the difference between the $716 million on the slide before for healthcare access fund expenditures and the $733 million on this slide for healthcare access fund expenditures?
There are really three differences, Mr. Chair. First of all, it does include the governor's funding proposals for the public option that he mentioned last week, purchasing some additional reform ideas that he's put forward, and also agency operating pressures. I can get a more detailed breakdown, but there are three other factors that go into the $733 million.
But why is there a difference between the one slide and the other one? They're both health care access fund expenditures, right?
Mr. Chair, the prior slide was $716 million. Those are the medical assistance expenditures that we'll be transferring to the $733 million here. So we're only transferring from the general fund $716 million to the health care access fund for medical assistance. These other numbers are coming directly out of the health care access fund.
All right, so it doesn't say medical assistance on the slide before, but that's just MA.
It's just MA. In fact, the total medical assistance in the healthcare access fund is currently funded at about 4%. if we make these changes, it would be funded close to 10% in 18 and 19. So that's what the $716 million transfer would take us from about a 4% charge to the Health Care Access Fund for medical assistance to about a 10% charge.
Okay, and Commissioner France, I know we don't usually don't look more than, you know, perhaps the next biennium beyond the one we're budgeting for, but, I mean, I see that in the governor's budget there's $323 million left at the end of 2021, and I see that in 2021 we've got a significant number of expenditures in excess of our revenues. I mean, have you looked at whether there'd be a balance, a positive balance in this fund at the next biennium if you projected this out?
Mr. Chair, that's exactly what this chart projects, is our estimate of what the balance would be with the increased expenditures out of the Health Care Access Fund. But with the additional $1 billion in revenue, we project that it would be $323 million balance at the end of 2021.
No, I mean the biennium beyond that one.
I'm sorry, sir, we have not, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All right. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And between the last two slides, Commissioner Franz, I'm just interested, you know, I've been getting a lot of emails on the sick tax proposal that the governor has proposing, people not happy with it. What other fee increases do you have as part of the governor's budget proposal? Any tax increases, fee increases, any kind of increase that the public is going to be paying for? Because this is looking like you're depending upon increased revenue. Can you tell me that?
Commissioner Franz.
Mr. Chair, Representative. Yes, sir. First of all, I mentioned there are some fee increases, and as I mentioned in the governor's tax proposal, there are some revenue increases in there, but I will talk specifically about the fee increases right now.
I would like both, if you could, please.
Sure. The total fees that would be included in 18-19 would amount to $162.1 million. This includes a $65 million railroad assessment fee for safety. It includes about $16 million for the operational fee for the DPS MinLars system, and about $24.7 million for increased fees in DNR operating accounts for the different funds, and about $56.5 million in some other areas. What we will do this afternoon when we send over the other sheet with the detailed listing by the agencies, we'll include a listing that will show each fee and where what fund it belongs to and how it's increased. And so that adds up to, as I mentioned, about $162 million in fee increases for 18 and 19. In the governor's tax proposal, don't know if I have those numbers in front of me in terms of the increase. I know that there was a, give me 1 second, I think I can find that. So the governor's budget proposed cutting taxes, tax reductions of $181 million. And in that budget, there's $115 million for aids and credits, as I mentioned earlier. So this is about a $300 million relief package in for Minnesotans. But I do not see in my list here the tax increases. I'll have to get that for you, Representative.
Representative Anderson.
And Mr. Chair and Commissioner Franz, you mentioned that that was for 18-19. Do you have fee increases or tax increases proposed for 2021?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, I do, and I'll have to get those numbers to you. I can give you the overall fee increases though right now, if that's okay. For the fee increases for 2021, would be a total of $169.8 million. Of that, again, $65 million was for the rail safety, railroad assessment for railroads. About another $16 million of that was for the DPS MinLars operational fee, another $27.6 million in DNR operating fees, and another $61.2 million in other fees around the agencies.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I'd be interested in getting the breakdown for both of those bienniums and the tax increases as well. But Commissioner France, outside of providing that data, I'm just interested. Earlier you had mentioned that the state is in the best economic state that it could be, that our budget reserve is fully, you know, funded and so forth. If that's the case, why are we asking the citizens of Minnesota to pay more in revenue to the state? Why are we charging higher fees to the working folks in Minnesota?
Commissioner Franz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's an excellent question. I think one of the areas, I'll use DNR as an example. One of the things that's happened with DNR, as many of you know, DNR operates with many different funds, and there's a special fund for licensing, for snowmobiles, for different kinds of activities, and those funds really are generally self-sustaining. And so when we don't make periodic changes to those fees simply don't keep up with providing the services, the level of service required to provide DNR with those oversight services. So in DNR's situation, this is directly related to the ability for those funds to provide those services that people demand. In the rail safety area, we believe the $65 million assessment on railroads to help promote and provide their support for rail safety is clearly an important mission that we think that the railroads should participate in. So that one obviously doesn't come from the individuals, it comes from the railroads. But in the other fee area, there are some fees in the health department, for example, for inspections, where we think that the fees that are required for an inspection by the Department of Health haven't been changed in a number of years. So we wanted to make sure that these fee structures keep up, especially in the commercial area, where businesses are paying for inspection, they can afford the inspection, they should pay the cost of the inspection for health services, whether it's for food safety or other kinds of safety issues. So there are a lot of different issues that the agencies will obviously be speaking to the different committees about their particular fee increases and why they think they're important. So in the fee area, we believe that these fees rightfully need to be carefully monitored. You don't want to increase fees too much. We believe these fee increases are moderate. They provide the kind of support for the actual activity that the citizens want, and so that's why we've made those proposals. In the tax area, all I can say, I think Commissioner Bowery can speak better about this than I can, but all I can say is there were some areas there. In fact, one of them was a reduction for charities to provide a more systematic way for charities to report sales tax benefits, but I think the other thing that there were some changes in some of the foreign tax credit proposals to make sure that all Minnesota businesses pay the same tax. And the idea was to try to level the playing field and make sure that businesses are on the same par. So that was the nature of some of the proposals by Commissioner Bowerly in the governor's tax bill.
Representative Anderson?
And Mr. Chair and Commissioner Franz, so is there any circumstance in which the governor would not increase fees or taxes on the citizens of Minnesota? I know he's done it in times of budget shortfalls, and now we have another round of a budget surplus. Is there any time at any point that the governor would propose a budget that didn't include fee increases on the citizens of Minnesota?
Commissioner Franz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I do know, I do recall from 2014, one of the issues we addressed in 2014 was about a $400 or $500 million tax reduction at that time to try to make provide more tax relief for middle-income Minnesotans. And I think that the governor doesn't want to raise taxes or raise fees on anyone if he can avoid it. The only reason you do so is to make sure that you are funding those services that Minnesotans want. So, sure, if there's a situation where Minnesotans don't want particular services or don't need those particular services, then we shouldn't continue to provide them. We shouldn't increase revenue or we shouldn't increase fees for those situations. But the governor here is responding to needs by citizens around the state to have access to more activities with DNR, to provide access to more schools and roads and bridges. So the funding that the governor is providing, he believes, is what we need in order to invest in Minnesota to give the services that Minnesotans want. So it's directly, in his view, it's directly tied to what Minnesotans want. And obviously, if we find a situation where they don't need or don't want a particular service, he'd be the first one to say, well, let's don't do that one anymore.
Okay. Last question?
I'll skip it, Mr. Chair. Sorry.
Okay. All right, I've got Representative Hillstrom, Dean, Drazkowski, and Torkelson. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I want to take you back a little bit to where the chair had asked if you had projected out into the next biennium. Have you projected what might happen to the state's budget if, in fact, the federal government repeals the ACA? Have you been looking at that impact?
Commissioner Franz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, to be honest, we look at a number of different scenarios, and what we look at right now in terms of this budget are the current law projections of what we believe we will be receiving from the federal government. for health care expenditures and other items as well. So right now, we've been unable to come up with a projected change that we felt was solid enough to make any forecast changes. So as you know, we're starting work now on the February forecast, and the February forecast will be delivered on February 28th of this month. So we have to make some of those decisions in the next several weeks, and we will be looking at those. To be honest, though, we, like I said, we haven't seen a lot of proposals that are so concrete enough that we can actually change the forecast, because we have to, by law, forecast what is the current law.
Representative Hilsman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in the event those things happen after the February forecast, what would be the process by which you would address those issues in your budget proposal going forward?
Commissioner Franz.
Mr. Chair, Representatives, well, that's a good question, I think, for all of us. I think we, it's a changing situation, and the governor the other day was talking about we can only do what we can do with what we know. So what the governor's budget proposal is designed to deal with the facts that we know, the law that we have. And that's why he proposed making some changes in the premium tax insurance premium relief bill and also some reform issues. Let's deal with what we know. But if, in fact, those numbers change dramatically after the February forecast and after we present our budget and after the legislature puts its targets on the different committees, we'll all be faced with that situation of what do we do if, in fact, the numbers change dramatically. And so besides worrying and losing even more hair, what we'll do is we'll share that information as we have it and make sure that we all have the same information and we can make the best decisions we can.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Franz. I just had a question. You know, when I got the governor's budget and I was looking at the health and human services stuff, I got to tell you, I thought I had just fallen asleep and had a dream, and that, you know, actually we had President Hillary Clinton and Speaker Melissa Hortman, because we had a public option, and we had reinstated the sick tax that was, you know, $1 billion just in a year and a half, and we're moving a giant step towards single payer and all of this stuff in health and human services. I drove into work and I was very happy to find out that that was not the case, but actually the budget still reflects that. And when we look at extending out the provider tax, the sick tax, that's not just, you know, that's a year and a half at $999. That's over $750 in 1 year. That's a huge tax increase on the state of Minnesota. When you look at expanding more people on public programs into one of two states in the country with a basic health plan, we're going to double down on that and hurt reimbursement rates for our small hospitals in greater Minnesota even more than they're already stretched. So it seems unfathomable to make those two steps. But one of the things that I think is perplexing is that so much of all of these monies depend on agreements that we have with CMS. And I could see if Hillary Clinton was elected that you might be confident about reinstating that and maybe getting some approvals from that CMS and administration. But what makes you think that President Trump isn't going to say, if you want to just raise taxes on yourself, we're just going to cut our funding and you're on your own, Minnesota? How is it that you can predict that the Trump administration will not only continue what they have been doing, but double down and continue for more government expansion? Have you been given any indication that they would give us another penny in that direction?
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, the indication that I've gotten is President Trump himself has said he wants to provide health care for everyone and he wants to make it affordable. So obviously, from my personal position, I can't imagine that we would see a situation where you'd actually take away benefits from people and not pay for these really great opportunities that people have to get health care and make it affordable. But we've had no information other than the President's remarks himself about what he wants to do with health care.
Representative Dean.
Well, I can tell you the limited amount of information that I've seen come from the administration is not to give an indication to states to expand public programs and to move away from competition, which is what I see happening here. So I think that that is probably a dangerous assumption to make if we're going to drain the health care access fund, which I think we're going to need every penny of, which is why I've been very protective of that in uncertain times ahead, and also to double down on expectations that we're going to continue to get BHP funding plus additional funding for Medicaid is spending the money twice. That's an additional, according to fiscal nonpartisan fiscal analysis that I asked for, it's almost $500 million in additional spending that I just don't see where we're going to get that money from. And I think raising taxes to do that is fraught with peril.
Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner, you had said that the governor is going to continue to raise taxes based on what he perceives to be the needs and or wants of Minnesotans. And I'm kind of wondering where the governor and where the administration ends in their desire to deliver services of any and all sorts to Minnesotans. Commissioner, needs could be characterized or understood to be finite in their description, but wants are almost infinite. So I was just really taken back at the idea that we're going to fund any wants out there that Minnesotans might have. Commissioner, I want a new truck.
I've got one.
Greg's got two. The question I have is not that. It's just I was just flabbergasted when I heard you say we're going to fund the needs and the wants of Minnesotans. Commissioner, the question I have is, I understood, and I don't have the summary in front of me, that in the budget forecast that the expenditures in health care were projected to grow by about 20%. So that 20% in the base coupled with the additional spending the governor is looking at, what kind of a percent increase over the current biennium's actuals would we expect to see with the governor's proposal?
Commissioner Franz.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to have Budget Director Representative look at that number. But in the meantime, while she's looking at that number, I'd like you to turn to the slide, a couple of slides down, called Price of Government Continues to Decline. To respond to your concerns, Representative Druskowski, about how much can we afford or how much do people need, we've been looking at a long time over how much of the tax dollar does an individual Minnesota spend on state government. The price of government has been around since 1991. It was really developed by the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce to try to give you all and the governors that have served since a perspective on how much are we spending. So the price of government is a measure of all state and local revenue that's raised compared to total Minnesota personal income. It's a ratio or a percentage. So if you take all state and local revenues, which totaled $44 billion for fiscal 2016. And if you divide that into the total personal income in Minnesota of $283 billion, that percentage is 15.7 that you see on the chart for 2016. So what we see here with this chart is that the percentage was highest back in 1994 at 17.9%. But we've seen really a steady decline over time. But the percentage is important because it does give us some measure of how do we decide how much state spending. This is only state and local revenues against Minnesota total personal income. But the declining trend that you see here, I think, highlights what we do in Minnesota, and that is smart governing, making the right investments, and making sure that it fits within our budget. And if you can see here, the projected continues to go down in the future with our projected spending. So I think one of the things that we want to make sure that there is a perspective here that we have to look at what can we afford, we have to look at what do we need. The governor clearly articulated that we have some resources available. I think we all agree with a $1.4 billion surplus for this biennium and a $1.4 billion surplus for the next biennium and over $1.3 billion in the Health Care Access Fund that we have some resources. The key, as you raise the issue, is how do you spend them and on what? And the governor clearly believes that in the jobs and economy and education areas in particular, that we have some needs that need to be addressed, you know, especially, for example, in the workforce and providing education to our educational opportunities to our kids. We need all of our kids to succeed in Minnesota, to continue our workforce to grow. We have a tightening labor force, and it's imperative. It's not only the right thing to do. It's imperative for the numbers for our kids to succeed in education and in training and job opportunities. So the governor does believe in investing in these opportunities that he thinks will help grow this state. And I'll get to the number of Budget Director Kelly, or something close.
Director Kelly. Chair, Representative, what I can tell you is that over the last 10 years, the average annual growth in health care spending is 5%. But specifically what is in this governor's budget, year-over-year growth, I'd have to do the math and get back to you.
Well, yeah, I'd like to see that, too. And I guess I'd like to see also, if you're getting back to us on that, the other calculation about the 5%. I'd be surprised if the total fund spending, at least, is only 5%. Maybe it's only general fund spending at 5% a year with Health Care Access Fund and a whole bunch of other stuff growing beyond that. But I know that Health and Human Services has been the one area of the budget that has taken more and more and more of the budget over many years. I'm not saying that that's not an important area, but, I mean, if you look at the percentage of the budget that is consumed by K-12 education versus Health and Human Services and higher ed, I mean, K-12 has probably been fairly constant over the years. Health and Human Services is rocketing up, and everything else, like higher ed, as a percentage of the total budget, is dropping. And so I guess I'd like to see that. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. I think it's important for Minnesotans that might be listening or watching to understand state government has the largest budget reserve in the history of the state of Minnesota. We have year after year of budget surpluses and a huge surplus projected in the future, the over-collection of the people's money, and it appears through this proposal, the plan for Minnesotans who have their money accumulating here at the Capitol is for the governor to not only spend it all, but go back to them and ask, no, tell them they're going to take more of their money from them. So thank you, Commissioner, and appreciate your presentation today.
So, Commissioner Franz, in terms of this price of government number that you gave us here, as I'm looking at this, is this the price of government based on the governor's budget, or is this the price of government based on what was in the November forecast?
Mr. Chair, it is on the forecast. We do it three times a year. Maybe I misspoke. Three times a year, after the November forecast, after the February forecast, so we redo it after February 28th, and at the end of session, so we can always see what the actual spending amount is. So that's what the projection is based on current law as of the November forecast.
Okay, so do you know, this isn't the governor's budget then, this is what it said in the November forecast. Do you know what the price of government would be if the governor's budget was to pass in totality?
Mr. Chair, we do not. We only do this, like I said, three different times a year based on the forecast and all at the end of session in terms of what was actually passed by the legislature and signed by the governor.
Okay, thank you. Okay, members, I've got Representative Torkelson, Fabian, and Liebling. Representative and Pulowski? And Pulowski. Sorry about that. And Carlson. All right. Well, we've got our list. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, for being with us today. I'd like to just briefly touch on some issues related to transportation. First, you mentioned the reinstatement of the MNLARS fee that was had been actually eliminated. For those who aren't up to speed, MNLARS, of course, is a system that produces driver's licenses and titles and you're proposing putting that fee back in place, and you said, you know, this is, we're working on things that the Minnesotans want, and I do believe Minnesotans want a system that in a timely fashion produces a driver's license and a title. But Commissioner, we've been working on this since 2008. How many times do we expect Minnesotans to pay for the same system?
Commissioner Frantz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, I'm not familiar with the overall history of what's happened with the MNLAR system. I do understand that people, and I just had to get a title recently myself, after my car was totaled in an accident. So, you know, you do need those things fairly quickly sometimes. I do know that people in general want to be able to access that information quickly and be able to move on and get the information. And I will look into the overall cost of that program over the last several years. My understanding is that this would complete the upgrade to the MNLAR system, but I'll double-check on that for you.
Representative,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it's not the first time Minnesotans have had that understanding. Next, other fees, you are proposing additional title fees and additional other fees in relation to folks getting their licenses and titles, which is also somewhat alarming at the cost. But I'd like to also take, you said you didn't have the delineation of taxes yet, but I do believe you are proposing significant hikes in the gas tax. Would you care to outline that at this point, or should we do that another time?
Commissioner Frantz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I mean, the governor will be releasing his transportation package, and the budget is virtually the same that he proposed last session. He believes that we need to have a dedicated stream of money dedicated specifically for roads and bridges and also transit going forward. So he is going to continue to do. He believes that if his budget was enacted, we would have $1 billion worth of investment in the next biennium alone for state and local bridges and roads and our transit system. You know, but I have to say I've been focusing on other things right now, and I don't have the particulars of the transportation package in front of me. I'm sorry.
Thank you. That's fine, Mr. Also, I believe the governor is proposing an additional half-cent metro-only sales tax for transit, and this is coupled with what we expect possibly be another quarter-cent raise, at least in Hennepin and Ramsey counties, depending on the outcome of the negotiations regarding the dissolution of CTIB. That would be a total 0.75-cent raise in sales tax for those folks in those counties and those of us that happen to purchase things in those counties. This seems to be huge.
Commissioner Frank.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I know that with the new negotiations over the CTIP and whether it should be dissolved or reformed will affect, obviously, what kind of proposal goes forward for the increase in the sales tax. And so I understand your concern. I know that's part of what needs to be sorted out is what effect, if there is going to be any change in the CTIP, what effect would that have in the governor's overall proposal?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. Well, you know, again, I don't know that all the citizens in Minnesota really want some of those particular investments. Mr. Chair, I have another issue. I don't know if you want me to delve into that now or later.
You know, we have a long list, Representative Torkelson, so as long as you've got the floor, why don't you bring it up now?
Well, thank you. And if the page would hand out the handout. Commissioner, this relates to the $105 million of federal funding that there was an attempt to approve it through the LAC last October, I believe, or September, perhaps. There was an information request sent in by Representative Sanders on October 31st regarding information in relation to this request and the emails back and forth among the departments in relation to that request. We just got a response to that. Actually, I sent in a repeat letter last week, and finally we got a response last Friday. From October 31st until last Friday is approximately 3 months. This seems like an inordinate amount of time, Commissioner. And in fact, the response we got has a serious number of redactions in it that we believe are inappropriate. Now that the governor's budget has been released, we believe most, if not all, that information should be public information. Can you explain your and your department's and the Department of Transportation's behavior in this particular issue?
Commissioner Franz.
Mr. Chair, no. The first time I've seen these exchanges, what we can do, obviously, is part of what happens when we're building the budget is that information is confidential until the governor's budget's released. So clearly the timing seems problematic, but also we'll go back and look specifically at what you requested or what Representative Sanders requested and make sure that that data, in, especially in light of the fact that the governor's budget's been released, cannot be more forthcoming. But I promise to look into it, but that's I don't know anything more about it.
Representative Parks,
thank you,
please.
Mr. Chair. Well, let's focus a little more on the $105 million then, Commissioner, because that was under your purview, and you made that request. That I understand there are spending issues. Federal funds come in, and the LAC does address those from time to time, but they're relatively minor amounts. This $105 million was 70% of that request that was made, and it is an unprecedented request. We've never done it that way before. Can you explain just why you thought it was so important that you would try to set new precedent and break really what seems to be the way we've done things for a long time?
Commissioner Franz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, as best I can recall at the time in October and November, clearly the concern was getting this money appropriated so that it could be released and get started in the next construction cycle, which obviously is people are starting to gear up for already. Part of the problem was that these requests were contained in some of the transportation bills that had been considered during the legislative session and did not end up getting passed. And so I think that the legislature had full warning and knowledge of a lot of these issues that had been put before the legislature during the session. I know the number increased after the session had been closed, but nonetheless, it's a normal process to require or request appropriation for use of federal funds. This number was bigger than usual. We certainly admit that, but in part because it was big and in part because we needed to get this money to the Department of Transportation so they could begin the process of letting out bids, getting these contracts signed for this upcoming road construction. So it was clearly designed, and the whole purpose was to let's keep Minnesota transportation projects on time and online. So to the extent the LAC is a normal process, to the extent this number was larger than usual, sure, but the need is pretty unusual in the state of Minnesota too. So we stand behind our decision to go to the LAC, which was denied, of course, so there was no appropriation at the time, and it still hasn't been approved at this time. So here we are in a situation where we gave the legislative process an opportunity to approve these funds, get this stuff moving to the Department of Transportation. I don't think these contracts or these appropriations are controversial. I think the only thing that's controversial is that we had a bigger number than usual. And so we don't make any apologies for the fact that we wanted to get these projects on the queue, ready to be contracted for this upcoming season.
Representative Thorson.
Thank you. One final comment, question. Well, Commissioner, projects may not be controversial, but the timing of this is, in my mind, extremely controversial. This all transpired very close to November 8th, and I look forward to seeing this redacted information as soon as possible. We've waited 3 months already. I don't want to wait any longer. Please expedite this process. Get us the information that is public information that that the citizens of Minnesota deserve to see in short order. And then let us examine that, and we'll have further chats in the future. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, on your price of government slide that you have, you talk about state and local revenues. Does that include tax, just tax? What's your definition of revenues?
Mr. Chair, Representative, this includes, make sure I get the definition right, it's... The revenues include all state and local revenues. So this includes all revenues sales taxes, all revenues by state and local governments. It includes tuition, for example, the University of Minnesota or Minnesota State. So this includes all of those charges by state and local units of government that are collected each year.
Representative,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, just for clarification, then would it include the fees that, for example, the governor is proposing as well?
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner.
Representative, yes, it would include the fees.
Well, Commissioner, don't know it. It would include, is it not true that it would include those fees that are being levied right now, but it wouldn't include the governor's new proposed fees, because this, as I understand it, is the price of government as projected in the November forecast, not the governor's budget, correct?
Mr. Chair, correct. I thought the representative was asking about fees in general. You're right. Fees that are currently on the books as of November forecast.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that's what I was getting to eventually. Thank you. Commissioner, you also said that, you know, we have a $42 billion general fund budget. We have, obviously, a $75 or close to $80 billion all funds budget. And in terms, when Representative Draskowski was asking some questions, I'm curious to know about, has your office or the agencies been instructed to recognize programs? Because I haven't seen anybody bring any proposals forward yet where they say, you know, this isn't working. You know, maybe we need to do this different. And I haven't seen any place in the budget that have come to me at this point where they're actually saying, this isn't working. Let's take that money and we can put that back to work someplace else. Do you have, how many dollars worth of those types of things have been identified in the governor's budget?
Commissioner Frank.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's a question the governor asks all the time. You will see in each of the agency's specific change item request, you'll see an operating adjustment request. And as part of the process to determine what, if any, operating adjustment an agency should receive, we went through that process about what are you doing now? What is the mission of the agency? Are there some things you don't need to do anymore, or could you do them better? For example, I'll use Minnesota Management and Budget. We are tasked at MMB with training, providing the overall training for the enterprise, for all the agencies. And one of the things that we've done over the years is we've charged agencies enrollment fee. So if you have an employee that needs to be trained for supervisor training or manager training, then you send that person to training, sign them up, send them to training, and then you have to pay for that person's cost of that training. And the problem with that training was that it's based on those agencies that have that money, and it's really for those that don't, it's a problem. So one of the things we sat around and talked about was how can we change that? How can we make sure that all the agencies, all the small agencies, the larger agencies, how do they all share in training to make sure that we have the right kinds of supervisory training, the right kind of manager training, the right kind of, you know, dealing with the public, because Minnesotans deserve a really talented and responsive workforce. So anyway, we started working through that, and we found that we felt that we could change that system and stop doing the fee-for-service, if you will, training, and start providing a mechanism so that all employees can be trained. And so we, and the part of that doing that analysis forced us to go back and ask people, well, what did you think of the training, the current training? They felt that we could do some things better and get rid of certain things. So M&B, when we make our budget presentation to the state government committee with Chair Anderson, we will talk about what are those things that we tried to do differently and stop doing that really weren't working as effectively as we thought. We really charged all the agencies, and every agency has a different story. Some agencies were able to take some folks and stop doing a particular transaction and move them over to something that became more important, or not fill, you know, refill some of those vacancies as they occurred. So in the operating budgets, you'll see in the schedule that we send later today, I think in almost every agency you'll see that operating adjustment, and that is where you will get this description by the agencies, what can we stop doing, what can we start doing more effectively, and how can we deliver services to Minnesotans in a way that is more effective. So to your question, each agency, you know, will be speaking to that as they make their change recommendations to their respective committees.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief here. I'll try to anyway. I was home this weekend back in the district, and I've had a number of people that contacted me in various ways, mainly on the street and at the hockey rink and stuff, and they just were really kind of almost dumbfounded by the governor's budget request when, in light of a $1.4 billion surplus, as Chair Drazkowski has pointed out, and fee increases, you know, on ATVs, are actually closing some ATV connections in the district that I represent. The deer hunters feel like the DNR has done a poor job of managing the deer herd in the state of Minnesota. And our regional parks, our small regional parks, they want them to pay more to enter them, but they're continuing to reduce services. They've reduced budgets and so forth up there. So, I mean, they're going to charge them an increased fee in cross-country skiing, and they don't groom the trails. We have volunteers doing it, and we're still going to increase their fees. This isn't working in my district. So I'm sure we got a long session ahead of us. I understand the process and so forth, but there's a tremendous amount of concern from my constituents. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, the way we're structured here, it's hard to keep a conversation going about one topic. I'm going to take us back to health care, of course.
Sure.
And talk a little bit more about that, because, first of all, I thought that Representative Hillstrom's question kind of went to the issue about what would happen if the ACA, well, when the ACA is repealed, I assume, and, you know, whether the administration has planned for that. And I think that the commissioner answered that by saying that the law requires him to plan for what's on the books now. But I think it's pretty clear that Republican House and Senate, Federal House and Senate, President Trump are planning to repeal the ACA, and some estimates I've seen say that Minnesota will lose about $2 billion in that exchange. And of course, even though Congress, the Republican Congress, has voted about at least 60 times to repeal the ACA, it is very, very clear that they didn't have any idea what to replace it with or whether to replace it at all if they'd in fact been able to repeal it before. So here we are in this situation where the country is really kind of on pins and needles, and a lot of Republican governors, in fact, are saying don't repeal unless you make sure that we're able to maintain what our state is doing, because obviously a lot of people are at risk of losing health insurance. So here we are, and we do have a budget reserve that's quite a healthy reserve, and I, for one, Representative Drazkowski, I'm very thankful we have that, because we're in a situation now where the federal government is going to kind of pull the rug out from under us, quite possibly, at least in terms of health care, maybe in terms of other things. And people who are talking about this kind of think one thing that they might do to us is give us a block grant for Medicare. Now, this goes beyond the ACA. This is just Medicare. They may give us a block grant, which is going to most likely be reduced funding, and then say, well, maybe if we're lucky, they'll give us more freedom to do what we want to do as a state along with that reduced funding. Maybe not. We don't know. But assuming that we get some freedom along with that reduced funding, we're going to have to figure out some things to do to keep providing or helping our folks have health care, because I think that's pretty important in Minnesotans. We've been a leading state on health care for many, many years, and I do not think Minnesotans would be very happy if we stopped, if people were not able to get health care that they need. And very importantly, we have a very large health care industry. So cutting $2 billion away from our health care industry really, I think, threatens our whole economy, a lot of which is really dependent on healthcare. It's one of our largest industries. So I look at the governor's budget, knowing that he's got to propose a budget based on what's in front of him, and I look at that public option, and I think, well, there's an idea. You've got to remember, the public option allows people to buy in. It's not providing more free or public subsidized health care to more Minnesotans. It's allowing Minnesotans to have an option that may work better for them, may cost less, and is one way to think about this, because one of the things that we can do to keep on allowing Minnesotans to get health care that they desperately need is to reduce administrative costs. In our public programs, we spend a lot of money on administrative costs. We hire HMOs to provide health care. We allow basically private entities to be imposed between our public dollar and our patient on public health insurance, and we waste a lot of money in administrative costs. So I think that what the governor's proposing, you know, it's obviously it's not what we're going to need when we find out that we're losing billions of dollars when the ACA is repealed, but it's at least it's a start. I think we're all kind of budgeting blind here because we don't know what the sand is going to be under the house we're trying to build here, whether it's going to be, you know, shifting sand or something a little more solid. We just don't know. So I'm very glad we have these reserves. I also do want to say a word about the provider tax and the healthcare access fund. You know, I, of course, have never thought that the provider tax was really structured the way it should be. Obviously, it's a tax that people are paying in a very small sector, relatively small sector of the economy. I'd like to see it restructured a great deal. But when we put the sunset in, nobody knew that we were facing possibly losing $2 billion in funds for health care. And for us to just say, well, let's just throw away the source of revenue without replacing it at a time when we may have the rug yanked out from under us in terms of health care, I think that would be really foolish, really foolish, because one thing we do not want to do, and I hope we all share this, I know we all share this, we do not want to send our economy into a tailspin in this state. And if we just suddenly cut the funding for health care, or the federal government cuts it for us and we do not have a way to keep things going, I'm afraid that's what we're going to be facing. And so we need to do this very, very carefully. And I'm really thankful that we've had the foresight, that the governor's had the foresight to build up that reserve, because I think we're going to need it.
Well, Representative Lieberling, if I can just interject an editorial comment. I guess I agree with you that we don't know what is going to happen in Washington. We have heard reports that there may be possible big cuts in funding, but I guess to me, that's the reason to not be proposing a new public option and to not be extending a new tax until we know what's going to happen. I guess I'm a little puzzled that the governor is proposing all these things when we don't know what's going to happen in Washington, D.C. I certainly can understand that we're going to potentially have to, well, we are going to have to react to something, but I am a little puzzled that he's proposing these things now before we know what we're going to be faced with.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Liebling,
the provider tax is hardly a new tax. You know, there are a lot of us, probably all of us have complaints about the way the fund has been used and probably complaints about the way the tax is structured, and we could be working on that, but it is not a new tax. And what we're doing here is getting rid of a tax that has supported health care in our state for many, many years. And at a time when we don't know what other funds we're going to be losing, that's what I think would be a very foolish, short-sighted thing to do.
Well, I'm not saying that it's a new tax, but the governor had signed a bill some years ago to sunset it at this time. And again, I just find it strange that we're proposing to extend it and make other changes like the public option before we know what we're going to be faced with in Washington, D.C. And I should say, Representative Lieberling, I'm not meaning to get into a debate with you. That was just my editorial comment. But you mentioned block grants for Medicare that we might be getting here in Minnesota. Did you mean Medicaid, medical assistance, or have you heard that they're also looking at doing something with the federal Medicare program, if I can put you on
yeah.
the spot?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I meant to say Medicaid, but I also meant to mention that Medicare may be severely impacted in the state and that we don't know right now. Obviously, Paul Ryan has a plan to take Medicare and turn it into a program where people are given a certain amount of money and then have to go out and buy a plan. So that also is on shaky ground right now. And although that's a federal program, and sorry that I misspoke and confused people because people often do confuse the two things. I didn't mean to say Medicaid, but Medicare, even though it's a federal program, a lot of people in Minnesota have both programs, what we call the dual eligibles, and a lot of our elderly people in the state are depending on Medicare. And if the federal government reduces that in some way as well, that will also severely impact our health care industry and our economy in the state, and we may be called upon by our citizens to step forward and try to help those folks as well. So just because that's a federal program, I don't think we can assume that everything's hunky-dory there either, because we have a, right now, we have Republican House and Senate and President, as everybody knows, and they are kicking around ideas that include making severe impacts to Medicare.
Well, I don't know what will happen either, but I would agree that there is certainly a lot of uncertainty. Representative Pawlowski. And then I've got, after Representative Pawlowski, I've got Carlson, Lagunias, and Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, can you tell me if the tax bill that the legislature overwhelmingly passed last session had been signed, how that would have impacted these numbers?
Commissioner France.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I can try a little bit. One of the, as you may recall, that bill had over $700 million for the 2021 biennium. I'm sorry, I'll get it right here in a minute. So I think it cost somewhere in the $300 million range for 18-19, and then it increased dramatically in 2021 to over $700 million. So the sheer size of that bill, in retrospect, was potentially a problem for us, looking at that would have eaten up over half of the projected surplus in 2021.
Well, Mr. Chair, Commissioner, it might be a good idea to keep that bill right in the back of your head somewhere. I have a hunch it could be passed again. And if it is, I know it dramatically impacts these numbers, and not today, but I would like to see in specificity what it would do to what would be available in the spending area if that a bill of that size were passed.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, by the way, just as a footnote, this began to remind me of the tax committee, not necessarily what we're discussing, but how it's kind of gone. You serve on it as well, and a couple of other people. We do a lot of philosophical discussing of different things there. But at any rate, I do have a couple, three questions. The last page we were on was dealing with the price of government. And a comment that I want to make, I was here when it was passed, and there was a lot of discussion about what should be included in the price of government and what should not be. And I've always felt that it gives us a trend line, which is the positive part, but it does show, I think, a higher percentage in terms of how the price of government is defined and what it, in my view, really is. And what I was picking up on, and maybe the commissioner can comment, he pointed out, for example, tuition is included. I don't know if he meant tuition and fees, if room and board is included when it's on one of our private college campuses, but tuition alone is hundreds of millions of dollars. And I'm not sure that that really reflects the price of government, because that's a discretionary purchase. You can pay for that service, or you do pay for that service. Now, I've always felt that the, some would say subsidy, I've always referred to it as the investment in higher education, but those dollars, in my view, would be included in the price of government, but not necessarily tuition, because it's a discretionary expenditure. So maybe rather than the commissioner responding, I could just say, you know, a good discussion, Mr. Chairman, maybe at some point would be for this committee to spend a few minutes on revisiting the price of government so people really have a good understanding of what's in it and what's not. And it's been so many years that since we passed that, that even though I was involved as a member of this committee at the time, I don't necessarily remember all that was in it or what was a part of that discussion. So maybe I can just stop there, and the commissioner can maybe be prepared if you decide, Mr. Chairman, to find some time to include a few minutes for that. Another question I had, though, directly of the commissioner, are there any fees being reduced in the governor's budget? It's my understanding that there are some or a few, and if you can recall what some of those might be and what the overall cost reduction is.
Commissioner France, and Representative Carlson, we'll look at that, trying to bring up the price of government here for a little discussion at some point. Thank you. Commissioner France.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I know that in the Department of Labor there were some changes, and they had reduced some fees because they had been able to make some savings in that area. Labor and industry, there was a fee reduction of over $5 million in the Department of Labor for some of the fees. Part of what's happened, as I understand it, and Commissioner Peterson can certainly speak better to this, is that with a robust economy, with a lot of construction going on, you are generating some fees that come with those permits that are pulled, and things are going so well that they believe they could make some serious reductions there. That's the commerce also. I wanted to make some changes in the financial institution area, but those are the two that I remember.
Now, maybe, Mr. Chair, being that that was part of our discussion earlier, maybe you can provide some of us with a little more detail on that. Third area, it's kind of like the first ended up being a comment, but, you know, our discussion being that we were kind of freewheeling for a while on the budget reserve, and some of you maybe have heard me comment on this before, but I was here in the early 1980s when Governor Cui was in office, and a fine gentleman, but he had campaigned on giving back the reserve that we had at the time. And after, I think it was six special sessions, and the budget really went in the tank, when he was leaving office, his comment was, or he was asked a question if he would do anything different, and it was to have a budget reserve. So I would only say let's exercise some caution on that, because you don't know really what's in the future, and a budget reserve can be very helpful and is very important to have. So I'd hate to see the state again kind of living on the shoestring, where if we have a downturn in the economy, that when the need often for government services go up, if you have high unemployment and the health and human services needs go up, and you know, so on and so forth, or maybe you want to stimulate the economy and you don't have the resources available, that can create some problems. So I would just say to exercise some caution. And I know a little bit about that firsthand in the early 1980s, because even though I was a relatively new member with just about 10 years in the legislature, I did end up carrying some of those major budget balancing bills, and know firsthand as a result of carrying some of those of what I speak. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Okay, we have Representative Lagunias and Mark Quartz, and then I think I'd like to, unless someone's got just a really, really burning question, get back to Commissioner France so he can try to get back to the presentation some. Representative Lagunias.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I think it's safe to say when you were doing your budget projections, things were not as volatile as they are now. And obviously, Representative Liebling brought up one source of volatility. But I think another source that we have to think about is the President has made it clear that China is not his favorite trading partner. And that worries me no end, because we are an agricultural state. And China buys, I think, they're the biggest buyer of our soybeans, for example. So as you are looking at your February forecast, I want to know how you are going to look at a possible drop in revenue over 2 years, because our farm, our soybeans and our corn are not going to China. How are you going to work on that?
Commissioner France.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, that's a great question. In fact, this will help me answer that question. If we go to the slide called Budget Pressures, you have in your package, what I tried to do with this budget slide was talk about the different pressures that we know that we're going to experience, and what you mentioned, Representative, is some unknowns that we have to deal with as well. Clearly, we've got population growth that's going on in Minnesota. We've grown by about 170,000 over the last 5 or 6 years. That would be like adding the city of Duluth and Bloomington together and increasing the population by that amount. So there's pressure there on government services. Demographic changes are occurring. Folks like me are getting older, and some of them are retiring. That creates certain demands and pressures on our health care costs. We have inflationary pressures we've had to deal with. The increased health care costs that we've already been discussing and how that is growing. We also have growing education and training needs to make sure that the folks we do have in this state are successful with the tight labor market. But to get to your point, Representative Wagini, is I think one of the things that we faced in the November forecast, frankly, which was after the election, what we faced then was, well, what can we say about the changes? Because every election brings forth some knowns and it brings forth some unknowns. And this particular one, we felt, brought forth a lot of unknowns. But we, at that time, the November forecast, as I mentioned earlier, we were really forced by law and by normal forecasting rules to know, to base our forecast on what we know and what the current law is. And as we get closer and as time goes on and we learn more and more about what may or may not happen, I mean, the trade issues are one, whether they're income tax changes, whether they're health care grant changes to the federal government, or highway fund distributions, we don't know what those might bring. So what we will try to do, and we're doing it literally as we speak now, is to assess what are those areas where we feel some comfortableness, knowing that there are likely to be some changes. But frankly, there aren't a lot of those yet. And as the chair mentioned earlier, I mean, that's the dilemma that the governor faced. He had by law had to deliver a budget on January 24th, and that was based on what do we know. And so the governor said we need to make changes to what we know and to the things we think need to be changed. We clearly need to be mindful of what we don't know coming down in the next year or so because of change in the administration and other world factors, world economic factors. So it's going to be a very challenging forecast, I think we're just all going to need to stay tuned. I think the legislature and the leadership and the legislature is going to have exactly the same difficulties that we're going to have, figuring out where they want to put their priorities and what do they want to do. So, you know, ultimately, after the February forecast comes out on February 28th, we'll have another point-in-time estimate. But that point-in-time estimate will be as good as it was at that particular point. So, you know, that's the thing that I've learned from Laura Kalambakidis, the state economist, and that is, you know, part of what you're doing with the forecast is looking at what you know, and that is what's in the bank, what's happening in the last year or so, what have you changed in terms of economic performance, job increases, wage increases, so you know some things, and that helps inform you. But when you turn around and start projecting it into the future, that's where it really, really gets difficult. And, you know, we're in one of the longest, I think, in another year or so, we'll be in the longest recovery, post-recession recovery in U.S. history. We're not there yet. So, you know, we're seeing a lot of positive things continue to happen with the economy. Just in early January, we released an economic update, a quarterly report, where we saw the projection for the growth in the future go up a little bit, about 0.1%. It's not much, but it's also going up, not down. So we still have to be careful. What are those things that are going to tell us that there's something bad that's going to happen for the Minnesota economy or bad for our budget situation? And we'll try to be mindful of those, but all we can do today is try to project the best we know.
Representative Wiggins.
Just a follow-up. Our state economist told us that when you're projecting a reserve, you have a number, a volatility number that you set in September, and you only set it in September. And it seems to me that that doesn't work now, that you need a new number for projecting volatility because there's so much going on. So our projection of the reserve seems way out of date to me. And by the time we get a new February forecast, it seems we have to have a much more robust projection of the reserve.
Commissioner Friend.
Mr. Chair, Representative, Well, that's interesting. I mean, as we know, in 2014, when the budget reserve law was changed, and we provided for this new automatic reserve calculation, and that was changed just a year or so ago to be every September 30th. So you're right. Now we do have an annual determination of what is the looking at the volatility of the revenue stream, and what percentage of that of our undedicated general funds should our revenue be, and that we change it once a year now. So, I suppose you could argue convincingly that we should do that more often, but right now it is set for September 30th.
Representative Guinness.
Well, it may be set for September 30th. I mean, we all recognize that this is a far more volatile time. We should have, when we get the February forecast, another number. We can say we have the old number, too, but we should have another number that actually represents the volatility that we're in, because otherwise we're going to have a reserve number that doesn't match reality. So I hope you'll consider figuring out an alternative number that will actually reflect what's going on.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I might figure that out, but unfortunately the state economist would might have some few words with me. As many of you know, the budget process, the forecasting process involves a lot of the same people at MMB, and to the extent we didn't have some of the documents available that we normally would have, that's my fault, and I apologize for that. But we're still trying to get through this budget presentation last week and give this material to you. So I think that would be something that we might not be able to add to her list of to-dos by the February forecast. Certainly we'll take a look at that and think about and have discussions with all of you about how we feel whether that volatility should change or not. But I'm not certain we can have an actual calculation by the February forecast.
Well, I would remind members, too, that under the law that was in the supplemental budget last year, we did pass legislation that the state economist needs to give us a report on the potential volatility based on history in the past of how much better things might be or how much worse things might be for a budget forecast as you get closer to the end of the budget cycle. And we did get that report and handed out the one for the November forecast year back a few weeks ago. And there will be one available, I guess, a couple weeks after the February forecast. Representative Markwart.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm somewhat surprised by the big concern by members about the big size of the governor's budget, when in fact the House majority approved last year in the budget almost all of the governor's numbers. If you look at the budget that was passed last year, for this year there's going to be a 5.9% increase in the budget, $1.2 billion that was approved by the House majority and the Senate majority and the governor last year. And if you look at the next 3 years, it's going to be about a $2.4 billion increase, 12% over the next 3 years, approved by the House majority here. And even if we don't change any laws at all, according to the November forecast, the budget, which was approved last year, is going to go up 7.4%, about $3 billion under state law. The governor's proposal takes it up about 10%. And if you look at the numbers, which we're talking numbers here and using the November forecast, what was approved for this biennium, 18 and 19, is an expenditure of $44.6 billion. That's what you voted for last year, $44.6 billion. The governor's proposal will be 45.8%, which means that the number approved by this legislature last year is 97.4% of the governor's number being proposed. So you can talk about this huge budget, but you have approved 97.4% of it, the largest budget in 159-year history of this state. And the other point I want to make is when I go home, the tax I hear about is the property tax. And property taxes have gone up $750 million in the last 2 years. And much of it because of the total lack of getting a tax bill out. What we do here in the state legislature has a direct and indirect influence on property taxes on the local level. So my question, Commissioner Franz, do you have anything in your, the governor's budget that would address the property tax issue?
Commissioner France.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, there are several, and obviously the first one that I would refer to is $115 million in aid to local to cities and counties, but also the property tax issue that that deals with the about $40 million to help with property taxes for those farms that are in school districts where there's been a lot of pressure to increase school costs. So what the provision does is it provides a the state support for those school districts where there's been an approved levy for construction or will be one in the future, and this would help reduce the property tax on the farmers in those particular school districts where these levies are approved, because as many of you know, the population size of these school districts with the number of farmers on a particular section of 1 mile section has really been decreased over the years, and there's an increasing burden on a fewer number of farmers to provide that funding for, particularly for school levy increases. So I think one of the things that you know, in speaking with the bill that you've authored, it was to really come forward with a way to provide direct relief so that the schools can build and enhance those schools and yet reduce that property tax pressure on those farmers in those particular school districts. So that's one we think will be particularly successful.
Thank you, Mr.
Okay. Just following up on Representative Markworth's comments, of course, he was just talking about the general fund number, not the all funds number. It doesn't include another roughly $1 billion in spending in the health care access fund. But speaking of all funds, I guess, Commissioner, can you give me a number of what you think the all funds budget is for, like, 18, 19, and 2021? Because I looked at the forecast, and it just seems really odd to me that, the general fund number is jumping supposedly $3 billion, but the all funds number is going up only $2.4 billion. And we've got another almost $1 billion worth of healthcare access fund money that would be in there. Usually the all funds number goes up more than the general fund number with more money coming in from the federal government and stuff like that. What do you think the all funds number is for 18 and 19 or 20 and 21?
Mr. Chair, my recollection is that the all funds budget for 16-17 was about $76 billion, and that for 18-19 will be about $79 billion. I don't have the number for 2021 in front of me, though.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I have, yeah. And I've got the number here from the forecast, and you're right, it's like $76.2 billion for 16-17, $78.6 billion for 18-19, but I guess I'm curious why it would grow less than the general fund, especially when we are looking at now getting more money with continuing the health care access fund, and continuing the 2% provider tax. Budget Director Kelly.
Mr. Chair, I need to take a look at some of the detail in there, but there are funds that are only appropriated on a biennial basis, and I'm speaking to legacy funds. And so those funds are not reflected as being appropriated in the forecast version of the all funds budget. And so that could be one reason why there is not the growth in the all funds that you're anticipated seeing. The governor's budget does appropriate, make recommendations on how to spend those funds.
All right, well, just curious, I mean, just in terms of, like, federal funds, too. I mean, medical assistance, about half of all your medical assistance money is federal money. That's an area that's growing significantly. And, you know, again, it's growing less than the general fund, which seems really odd. Well, Commissioner, maybe you can dig into that a little bit more. Commissioner, we got a little bit. Oh, I'm sorry. I'll call on Representative Erdahl maybe to talk, the former chair of the Legacy Committee, to say something on that.
I just had a quick question. Commissioner Kelly, what did you say? Did you say that Legacy was an annual appropriation?
Mr. Chair, Representative, some are annual, some are biennial, and so some are in the forecast. We do not show appropriations in the 18-19 biennium until there's legislative action.
Thank you. Just to clarify, the outdoor heritage part, which is 33%, is the only one that is annual. The others three are biennial.
Thank you.
Okay, Commissioner, we're, you know, I hate to cut into your evening time, though I know that you spend a lot of hours in the evening working here anyway, but I guess I am hopeful that you and Budget Director Kelly would be available tomorrow evening. We have our meeting that we already had scheduled at 6:30 to deal with the RFA bill, and I guess I'm wondering, will you be able to come here after that to answer some more questions?
Mr. Chair, I'm scheduled at the Pension Commission at, I think that's at 5, so assuming that works out well, you will, we'll plan on being here tomorrow night at 6:30 is when you begin?
6:30, right, right. And I guess, I know there's the region meeting at 5 o'clock and a reception after that. I'm not sure what they're going to have for food there, but if people want to grab a bite to eat at that, that'd be fine, or we'll waive the rule that says you can't have food here if you want to bring in a sandwich while we're doing that meeting. Commissioner, we've got about 5 minutes left. Do you want to go into the rest of your presentation a little bit?
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. If you wouldn't mind, I'd like to just sort of summarize a little bit.
Sure.
Because I appreciate the questions. They were very helpful. And I think one of the things that that we tried to do for some of the other slides later on was to kind of describe the areas of priority, and so that's what you'll see with the schedule that you you get later today. You'll see the dollar amounts that attach to these different areas. So, I mean, the governor's, you know, four areas of focus have really been on trying to make sure that we take care of the jobs and the economy in this state, to make sure that we really have an opportunity to see our jobs grow and people succeed. Obviously, he's concerned about education, early education, K through 12 education, higher education. So we really want to make sure that we focus on those areas. And as we've talked a little bit today about government reform, how do we do a better job of governing, one of those is the IT, cybersecurity and infrastructure issue that the Commissioner of Minute, Tom Baden, will be talking to many of you more about going forward, is to make sure that we really think about how do we deliver services, how do we fund those IT services. I'm really pleased the governor and the speaker and I have talked about this issue. Obviously, the speaker has put some interest out there about trying to figure out a way, how do we collectively decide where do you spend your IT dollars? And there's obviously recognition that we have a lot of old IT that needs to be updated. We've got a lot of data that's at risk on these old platforms. We have a lot of services that are just really slow and we need to upgrade. But to some of your concerns, we need to do it in a thoughtful way. And I think one of the things the speaker wants to bring to this discussion, and we really look forward to that, is collectively deciding where are we at risk for cybersecurity, what are those infrastructure things that are absolutely essential. For example, the SWIFT system, the statewide integrated financial transaction or tool, is one of those things. That's the state's official books and records. That's how we keep track of all payments, all payroll, all budget items, all employee issues, and all employee records. So there's so much that goes into that. So anyway, I just want to end on that area of suggestion by the speaker, that we can sort of work together to figure out where are these areas that we can do some reform, do some spending that makes sense, and it can really deliver services to Minnesotans. I mean, that's got to be the key. A lot of you have made that clear that for you. It's got to be the key, is how do we show Minnesotans that they're getting value for the dollar that they're spending? And that's our mission. But thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Budget Director Kelly. And we will see you back tomorrow. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.